Testing 1, 2, 3. Welcome to Keys of the Kingdom. I'm Brother Gregory, and we're going to talk again about the Kingdom of God. And I've promised a lot of the people on the network that I would talk a little bit more about being exempt from Obamacare. And there's a lot of little tricks and things that people are doing to try to avoid having to be forced to purchase health insurance that they don't feel will actually serve their needs. And it's amazing that we've suddenly gone that far in America, but I guess I'm an old guy. People tell me I'm an old guy, but then I challenge them to, oh, well, I'll outwork you today, and they usually shut up about it. But anyway, the reality is that I've seen the changes in the spirit that is dwelling in America. And that spirit doesn't dwell necessarily in a place, but in a people. And the American people are not the same American people that, you know, crossed the Atlantic Ocean in little tiny boats to find a land where they could be free, and discovered that unless they wanted other people to be free as much as themselves, they weren't going to be free. They weren't going to survive freedom. And so they had to learn how to care about one another as much as they cared about themselves. And that alone is what made America great. Not constitutions, not imaginary centralized governments, but the fact that people in America learned to care about one another as much or sometimes more than they cared about themselves. This is what made America strong. This is what made America a powerful nation. And what we have today is something quite different. We aren't as powerful. We have a lot of equipment and machinery, but we are not as powerful as we once were because we do not have the power of the Spirit. And one of the major problems of this is the churches. The churches have stopped doing what Christ said to do almost a century ago as a general rule. There are a few churches around and do some things that Christ said. They talk about Christ. They talk about faith. They talk about love. They talk about charity. And they even do some of that. But they're doing nothing, nothing like the first century church did. Building a bridge halfway across a ravine will get a lot of people killed. You have to go the whole way. You have to put on the full armor of God. You have to do it the way God said to do it. And people aren't doing it the way God said to do it. They're doing it their way. And that's why they're having the problems that they're having. And so anyway, I wrote an article and we sent it out on the Kingdom News list. And we also sent it out in the network. And we'll share some of that with you here today, and you'll find it on our Preparing You site, and it's basically entitled "Exempt from Healthcare," and it begins with a quote from Proverbs: "Understanding is a wellspring of life unto him that hath it." But the instruction of the fools is folly. So this idea of having health care, a lot of people think it's a really great idea. And they have no idea in history when they had health care before. Because they had health care way back in the days of Rome. They had health care way back in the days of Babylon. And certain things resulted from having those health care systems based on an authoritarian benefactor. And that's what we're talking about here is the modern healthcare system in England, Canada, the United States is based on an authoritarian benefactor, someone who exercises authority one over the other, forces the contributions of the people, and then makes benefits available to all, supposedly equally available to all. That is only okay in the minds of those who have a certain spirit of covetousness. It's not okay in those who are not covetous. They think, why do I want to make other people pay for my health care? They can't even imagine doing that. But most people in America today, I shouldn't say most because it actually would have been voted down had it been put to a vote. But we know that part of the reason it would have been voted down is people had other systems already in place, or they just didn't want more taxes or whatever. There's a lot of other reasons not to want health care. And somebody asked me the question, wrote me the question, in light of Obamacare, they call it Obamacare, and of course it's not necessarily called that, but that's the name that has been put on it. I don't want to give a bad name to Mr. Obama, but it says in light of Obamacare not being created for health care, and only a tool for control, how will my being active in the Living Network, referring to the Living Network that we are forming here at His Holy Church, keep me from paying Obamacare or being fined by the IRS? Now, I went on to say that I absolutely agree that what is often called Obamacare, these healthcare systems, is not really as benevolent as many people would like the populace to believe. You know, a lot of the poor people and a lot of people who are just anxious for this think, oh, it's wonderful, they'll pay for my doctor bills, I'll be able to go to the doctor and it won't be broke, and I'll be guaranteed insurance. You know, it's kind of like what a lot of people are saying, that, you know, they elect this guy that he'll pay their mortgage. And it ended up quite the opposite. So I agree that there's ulterior motives for bringing this about, and it's not really a benevolent motive. Although some people who think it's a good idea actually have some sort of genuine care for other people. But that's not really the power that moves things in modern governments. What moves things in modern governments is somebody's going to make money. I mean, you can go back. I mean, this is available online. You can probably Google Nixon and healthcare, and you'll find a recorded interview of Richard Nixon sitting there talking to one of his advisors, who's telling them that, yeah, we'll set up this healthcare, and this will be a win-win for the insurance companies. I mean, there was money pushing that. That nothing happens in government these days without somebody going to profit from it, because it's a profit motivated industry. It's because you're dealing with billions and billions of dollars in government, people who want that money are in there trying to manipulate what government does. I mean, it's just gonna happen. I mean, if you throw dead meat all over your yard, expect to have flies. That's just the way it is. Dead meat draws flies. Money draws greedy people. Offices of power draw men who seek power. That's just a force of nature, you know. It's not about political parties. It's just the nature of the beast which you're creating. You're creating governments of power. You're giving them more and more power to do more and more things that you think will benefit you. And then you will gain and gain and gain. But in truth, it will be your own blood that will be swallowed. The net is spread in the sight of the bird, says Proverbs. Consent thou not with those with an evil eye. What's the evil eye? You know, a covetous eye. Well, if we do this, we'll make people provide for our health care. But you are going to get caught up in the net. It, you know, the rich will figure a way around this. And the poor will think that they're going to get a really good deal, but in the long run, they're going to get a really bad deal. It always happens. But anyway, so the question is, how do you get out of it? Well, it's not a really healthy question to ask to begin with. You know, because really what you should be asking is, how can I provide health care for those who really deserve help and not waste it in a bureaucratic snafu that government-operated health care often becomes? Because it ends competition amongst medical systems, because it doesn't matter whether they're good or not, they're still going to get paid. And it doesn't matter if you work really hard and become a really good doctor, you're only going to get paid so much. The insurance companies don't even have to try to sell insurance anymore. You have to buy the insurance or you'll get fined. You know, they'll complain and hem and haw, but that's just take the pressure off of them. There's some sort of money controlling interest that's moving this into place. It's not love for the little guy. That's a show, okay? But you can believe what you want. You will anyway. The truth is, this controversy of healthcare and having to sign up for it is the same Christian conflict which caused people who looked to the early church for their welfare instead of the genius of the emperor, like Septimus Severus, and his system of public welfare to be persecuted. This was the reason Christians were being persecuted under numerous of the emperors, is because they would not sign up for health care. Now, am I telling you not to sign up for health care? No, I'm just telling you how it works and what's happened in the past. I'm telling you what the church should be doing, what you should be doing, what you should be interested in. If you want to be free, you have to want to free others as much as you want to be free. There is no magic document that you fill out. Now, I may have time to get into some of the things that you can do. I'll probably have to save it for another show, but by then we're going to be going on to other subjects, because we got other articles coming out on the Living Network, and if you're not on the Living Network, you're going to miss them, just like you probably missed this, how to be exempt from Obamacare. But you can go to Preparing You and find the article at preparingyou.com. That's one of our websites. Anyway, the early Christians would not sign up for their public welfare and healthcare systems offered by Rome. These were offered through the temples. That's what the temples were for. They were the public welfare systems. Originally, they were private, but they were made public under Augustus Caesar. They'd started going that way a little bit under some of the previous proconsuls, but under Augustus, there was huge changes, sweeping changes, and they moved from being a republic to an indirect democracy. Because most people don't know it, but Augustus Caesar was actually elected to office by an electoral college. As emperor, that was a 10-year term of office. But as president of Rome, that was only a 1-year term of office, and he had to be elected every year. And he didn't even win every year. But emperor, he won that every 10 years. And he had to take an oath of office, and it was a government. And he was elected by the Electoral College, which was the Senate. I mean, where do you think they got these ideas? They got them from Rome. Why do you think all your major public buildings in Washington have Roman architecture? Why does your treasury look like the Temple at Ephesus? Because the Temple at Ephesus was the treasury. It was the World Bank of its day. That's what these temples were. If you go to our website at Preparing You and look up temples, it will show you what they were doing in each of these temples. They financed everything from war to welfare in these temples. But they were called pagan because they were run by men who called themselves benefactors but exercised authority one over the other. They were run by men who were called things like patronus and conscripted patri, which means conscripted fathers. These are the fathers of the earth. And Christ said, call no man on earth father, because he was preaching another system. Christians today have no knowledge of that. Very little knowledge of that, and have no idea that they're actually doing the exact opposite of what Christ said. What Christ said was to come together. What John the Baptist said is come together and take care of one another through free will offerings, which is exactly what Moses said. Now, we're just finishing up one of our series on devotions. And the last two shows that we did concerning these devotions, which will be listed, I think they're like 7 and 8. But we mention in them the Lagrangian effect, which has to do with the Lagrangian point, which is 92.6 million miles from the sun and 1 million miles from the earth. There's a space out there where if you put a satellite, it just hovers. It's halfway between, it's not halfway in distance, but it's halfway between the power of gravity between the earth and the sun. And so it's in this kind of limbo state of zero gravity. It's not pulled too much towards the sun or not pulled too much towards the earth, and it can just stay there. That's actually where you want to be. But right now you're pulled to the earth, and all the ideas of the earth are keeping you in this state, bound to the earth, the world, the flesh, and the devil. Because you haven't really repented, you haven't really turned around, you haven't really headed back towards the ways of God. But if you do that, you don't have to go all the way back. You don't even have to go halfway back. You know, 96 or 92.6 million miles from the sun, but only 1 million miles from the earth is this Lagrangian point. And this is what the prodigal son did. He had to go back. He didn't have to do anything. You're not saved by works, but he had to go back willing to be a servant, recognizing his sin, that he had sinned against his father. That's why they always say, get baptized and confess your sin. And your sin is that you thought it was okay to desire benefits from men who call themselves benefactors but exercise authority. And that includes public schools, public health, any of these public benefits that come from the temples of the government that you now bow down and serve. You should have been providing all of that through your churches. That's what people of faith were doing in the first century church, in the early church, in the first 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 800 years of the church. Not those organizations that said they were the church, but the ones that are actually the church. See, today, you know, in the article I had been reading from, it says, most modern Christians, however, respond to arguments like this by saying that the Old Testament's cruel and fortunately outdated laws have nothing to do with how they live their lives or moral precepts that guide them today. What if I were to tell you that the Old Testament and the New Testament were in agreement with each other? What they were telling you to do in the Old Testament is exactly what Christ was telling you to do. You would think that that's crazy. Look at what they were doing in the Old Testament. The problem is, we explained this in the last show, is you're looking at the Old Testament through the eyes of the Pharisees. That's who you asked. At the same time that Christ was there, there was another more prominent religious group that was full of flexibility and individuality, so it wasn't considered one single group, although we have one name that describes it, generally speaking, and it doesn't do it justice. But they read the same exact Old Testament as the Pharisees, and they came up with a completely different activity. They were the most charitable group, religious group, in all of the Mediterranean. They took care of all their needs. They didn't depend at all on any public welfare, either from Herod or Caesar. They took care of all their social needs, all their health needs, everything within a system of free will offerings and charity. And they had so much surplus that they were able to help other people outside of their own network and group. They didn't take oaths, just like Jesus said. They didn't do animal sacrifice. They did do, you know, like Passover, which is actually a meal. And they took care of one another. There's a lot more to it, but I won't go into all that. And they read the same exact Torah. They said that the Pharisees' interpretation of the Torah was a fiction and a fraud. What were the Pharisees doing? They were piling up stones and killing sheep and setting them on fire. These other guys weren't doing that. So what were they seeing in the Old Testament? You weren't. Well, you can go to our website and we'll show you what they were seeing. And we're showing why they see it, which, you know, and just for the record, that group was called the Essenes. They didn't call themselves that then. Some people called them that. Nobody even knows where the name came from. But I know a lot of Essene groups today. They don't even know. I mean, they have semblances of some of the characteristics because you can read all about the Essenes. But they don't know why the Essenes, because they don't understand the Hebrew language. I actually joined some of their groups. I mean, you know, intellectually I joined the groups. I didn't actually join them as a member. But I started studying what they had to offer. And they don't understand the Hebrew language. And so I had to write a book about it. And you can get it, that, download it for free. And we got another one coming out eventually. And it will tell you also. But if you were doing what they were doing, the Essenes were doing, really doing, you would be automatically exempt today from Obamacare. But you'd have to do the whole thing. You know, you don't necessarily have to have a Passover lamb or any of that stuff. You have to do the whole thing in principle and in spirit. Another thing that was written in the article is, as for Jesus' own family values, he never married, he never had children, although many records show that he did marry and did have children. I don't know whether he did or not, but this idea is mostly a product of what came out of one particular church, who actually killed over 60 million people who didn't think the way they did. Because early church fathers talk about Jesus' family. Early church writers, which we quote still to this day, but we never quote that part of what they wrote, write about Jesus' family. It's shocking. Now, it's not important to me whether you believe that he had a family, but these guys go on and say he turned away from his own mother time and time again. For example, in the wedding feast, Jesus says to her, "Woman, what have I to do with you?" Well, actually, he was saying in another gospel that my time has not yet come. And that was actually in the Gospel of John, which many theologians have opinions about what and why that was written. And of course, you're reading the English here and not the Greek. But the reality is he didn't turn away from his mother. When he was hanging on the cross, he was providing for her needs, saying, "Behold thy mother," making sure that somebody was there taking care of her. He doesn't mention that in his article. I bet you if that guy was hanging on the cross, he wouldn't be worried about his mother. Jesus was. They paint these pictures. Intellectuals paint these pictures. And people who don't want to know the truth just follow them. They don't do a thorough study at all. But of course, now I've done several shows on this particular article, so you can go back and listen to those old shows and see and talk about all the things that this guy said that are just completely not true. He says, even sincere Christians cannot agree on Jesus' morality and moral codes in the New Testament, holding legitimate differences of opinion on a number of moral issues that remain unresolved based on biblical scriptures alone. No, that's not true. Christians are almost entirely in agreement on all moral issues. What we're not in agreement with is who is exactly and actually a Christian. Because see, a Christian by definition is someone who follows Christ. He's got to be in agreement with Christ. He has to conform to Christ, not according to some doctrine of an individual who says Christ was thinking this or Christ was thinking that, but actually what Christ was thinking. Actually what Christ was saying. And that's not hard to figure out. But evidently at least 39,999 Christian denominations haven't got it right. There must be one out there who does. I'm not going to say who he is. It doesn't really matter. The one Christian denomination that's got it right, Christ knows who they are. And you might find one or two in almost every church. Well, you probably wouldn't find them in every church, but you'll find them in many churches. But most of the churches, they're not preaching Christ. Oh, they say they're preaching Christ. They say they're Christians, but they're not really. How do you know who's the Christian? By their fruits, by what they're doing. The modern Christian church has brought the entire nation of the United States into bondage, into a bondage worse than that of Egypt. And they seem real comfortable in it. They brought them so that they pray to men who call themselves benefactors but exercise authority. They bow down to the fathers of the earth. You know, a girl wants to get married, she might ask her dad. But according to the law, she has to ask the state for permission to get married. And then they worry about same-sex marriages and all this stuff. Should they even be getting a state marriage? Do you know what a state marriage is? Do you know what it means to get a state marriage? What rights you lose when you obtain a state marriage? What rights they get over your union when you go out and get a state-licensed marriage? Is that the only way you can get married? No. And we've written whole articles on that. You can go read those. But anyway, we were going to talk about health care. But the reason why I went into this little prelude is some people think that, oh, well, we'll just make out these little, some sort of form. We'll fill out a form and join some little organization. And then we'll just automatically be exempt from health care. If you were actually a Christian doing what Christians were doing in the first century, you would be exempt from health care. And we go through who's exempt now and how they're exempt and why they're exempt in the article. And I probably will have to add more to it. But I'm trying to get to a point. There is no simple, easy, fill-in-the-blank solution here. There is a simple, easy solution, but it's not about filling in the blanks. It's about changing your ways. You need to gather together and become the social welfare of the people, for the people, by the people, but according to the perfect law of liberty. In other words, you get to choose what you're going to pay in and who you're going to pay it to. And they get to choose how they're going to help you. You cast your bread upon the waters in hopes that it comes back to you. That's faith, hope, and charity. It's not entitlements. If you are a part of any system where you are guaranteed entitlements, then that system will have a guarantee entitlement to make you do something. Because it's quid pro quo. You choose to force, they get to force you. You know, it was common knowledge at one time in America that as long as you look to government to solve your problems, you will always suffer tyranny. That was William Pitt. And that's exactly what's happened. But now, after a century of socialism, few people even understand just how socialist they've become. And socialism is a disease. It's the idea that you can take away from your neighbor, desire to take away from your neighbor by force to benefit yourself and your personal welfare. That's what covetousness is, and that's what socialism makes legal. But it also centralizes power into somebody's hands who are going to decide what gets taken away from you. People like Plutarch, Polybius, all these guys warned against that back in the days of Rome. John the Baptist warned against it in Judea. Christ preached against it in Judea. But we've gone that way. While the supposed Christian church was on duty. So how do we get around to the solution? Well, we'll have to do that in the second half of the show, because we're at break time. So we're going to take a little break, and we'll be right back to Keys of the Kingdom in just a moment. Maybe we won't take a little break. Oh, here we go. Well, welcome back to Keys of the Kingdom. In the article, and we'll try to get through this quick because we're running out of time already, and we can't solve problems this big. What we're doing is outlining these problems so that you can start doing something about it. If you don't do it, it isn't going to happen for you. Those people that are doing it, it's already happening for them. So it's not about just knowledge. It's about the implementation of knowledge. Now, I gave a little bit of history under Judean welfare on that same article, and you can go read it. And there's lots of links in that article that takes you to other pages so that you can be brought up to speed by what these words mean. But this idea of a government to exercise authority, you know, a lot of people want to have kind of a libertarian philosophy, a, you know, live and let live, a laissez-faire kind of government that doesn't control every aspect of your life. But you need to have some sort of social structure in place. It's a very weak social structure, but because it depends upon virtues. Recently on one of our networks, they were trying to figure out, what do we do about all the people who join the email networks and just sit there and never do anything? Shouldn't we kick them off after a while? Well, occasionally we have kicked them off because we have found out that they were doing stuff. They were out there farming emails and trying to create their own little network, and they were just using our work and actually calling up people and steering them away from what we were doing and trying to get people to follow them. And we can. It was kind of miraculous how we found out what they were doing. And I'm sure there are a few guys that are doing this. And everybody they entice away, we probably don't want them anyway, because they're enticing them away with bad ideas. And, you know, what I read at the beginning of the show is really important for everybody to understand. And there was actually, I could have picked from any one of a dozen quotes that said the same thing in the Bible, but I picked Proverbs 16:22 that says, "Understanding is a wellspring of life unto him that hath it." So the people that were seduced away evidently didn't have understanding, because I actually saw the emails this fellow was sending out to get people to follow him in his ways, which do not bear fruit. That actually, you know, and now he's suffering, but so are some of them. But they fell for his line. You know, it always, you know, a con man, now he didn't think of himself as a con man. He actually believed what he was saying was true. But he had been conned himself. And why? Because he was vain. He believed in his own ideology. That was his idol, what he had imagined to be true. I learned a great deal from him, mostly from his errors when I started seeing into his mind and how it was working. But that understanding is a real understanding is a wellspring of life. That's why it says, "By their fruits you shall know them." Unto him that hath it, it's a wellspring of life. But the instruction of the fool is folly. And he was telling people foolish things, and they were believing him. And they were violating some basic Christian principles, yet they think they're Christians. It was interesting because I saw someone else do this on the network who was bad-mouthing me. I knew they were. They were saying things that I had done this and that and the other thing, you know, and they were telling people, you know, very cleverly, dropping little things in conversations and everything. And I knew that they were saying this to a number of people. And I just let it. I just was curious. Okay, where is this going to take these guys? And lo and behold, of those guys, all those guys, one of them came to me and said, "What is this? Is this true? Did you do this? Did you do that?" Well, I had over 600 pages of notes. I had actual original emails. I had explanations that were, you know, were conversations recorded. I said, "Well, here it is. This is what actually happened. Here they are responding. This is what their answer was. This is what my answer was." And he went and read it. He's still with us. The other guys who did not care to take the time to hear two sides, they're gone. They're not a part of the network. They're not exempt from health care. I'm exempt from health care. I don't have to pay anything into health care. It's not a problem. I mean, it's actually, though, I do pay into health care. I pay into other people's health care. That's what it is. I mean, everybody who's exempt, if you go down and read farther in the article, we show you who's already exempt. And they're exempt because they're already taking care of one another. And this is what's important. If you're looking for a free society where you just don't have to pay in and help anybody else out, because nobody's going to make you pay in, that's great. But if you choose a society where you don't pay in, you don't help each other out, you don't take care of one another, your society will be totally overrun by the first invasive force that comes along. There's no loyalty between you. There's no communion and community between you. You're not helping. What made America great was the fact that people were minutemen for each other when there was fire, when there was famine, when there was a hard winter, when there was a drought. They were there for each other. They learned to be there for each other. They learned to help one another out. When they had the common purse where, you know, from each according to his ability and to each according to his need, they starved every winter. They were eating themselves every winter. Not every place, but in many places, that's what they got down to, is cannibalism. Actually, they were digging up bodies and eating them in Jamestown and places like that. But when they went to from each according, you know, to each according to what he produces, what you produce is yours. And if you need, you have to wait for charity. Somebody has to provide it by charity. They started this in both colonies at the same time, although they came to the conclusion independently, as if a collective consciousness was lifted off of them that thought that was a good idea. And they of course argued, you know, like, oh, we're supposed to help one another, the Bible says. And in Jamestown, the head of Jamestown, which was a miracle that this guy was the head of Jamestown, when he got there, the captain was going to hang him. And they opened up the orders, and the orders actually said, the king said, no, you're supposed to put him in charge. He says, well, I guess we better not hang him. And so anyway, when he heard these arguments, he said, he just quoted Thessalonians. You don't work, you don't eat. And he shut the book, and he walked away from the table. He returned them to private ownership. That's the society you have to have. But hard times still came, and they had to help one another. And that's what got them through when real hard times came. Starvation ended. There was never a shortage again once they went to that rule. It wasn't that nobody ever went hungry, but when they went hungry, people helped them out. And who did they help out? Those who helped them out. Natural, organic loyalty developed. Communion between each other created communities. And those communities became strong. They became bands of brothers. So against an overwhelming foe, they could win because they had learned to care about each other. So if your plan for society does not include health care and welfare based on faith, hope, and charity and the perfect law of liberty, your society will not succeed. Christianity did. And that's what they did. They outlawed private religion, private welfare in Rome. And that's why Christians were persecuted. So anyway, we show in these systems that existed way back then in Judea. You know, they had, you know, Herod didn't just build the temple at Jerusalem. He also built the temple of Roma. And the Temple of Jerusalem, if you wanted to join their social welfare system set up by Herod, originally started by the Hasmoneans, but Herod really turned it into this scheme. And he knew about it because he had gone to Rome and studied at Rome. But his system, you'd had to be baptized into it. And then you had to pay into it, into the temple. That you had to pay in. There were people there checking to make sure the right hand of government was making sure that you gave your alms, that you helped out. And you had to give according to what you made. They actually had Gabbai and Molkai collectors who would go out and they would actually pace off your fields because they wanted to know how much grain you were going to produce, because you had to pay in a certain amount in order to sustain the welfare of the people. That's what you had to do. Because you were a member of the Temple of Jerusalem built by Herod. Now, if you were a member of the Temple of Roma built by Herod, you didn't have to do the baptism thing because that wasn't their tradition. They had another tradition. But we called the temple at Roma pagan and the temple at Jerusalem as part of the faithful. No, both of them were pagan in nature because both of them depended upon benefactors who exercised authority. But you signed up so that you could have free bread and sometimes circuses at the public expense, which was your neighbor's expense. And this did not create the loyalty that made your nation strong, your society strong. It made it weak. Jesus talked about these things. The Old Testament, love thy neighbor doesn't mean covet thy neighbor's goods. It means don't covet. If you want eternal life, you have to keep the commandments, which means don't covet. He's telling you the systemic way in which Christianity worked and in which Judaism worked. The Jews today are following the Pharisees or, you know, some other sect of Judaism. But not Moses. They're not doing Moses. I mean, Israel over there in the Promised Land, what we call the Promised Land, which is actually over there, Israel, the nation today, they have a heavy progressive income tax, which is a Corvey system of statutory bondage, forbidden by God, forbidden by Moses. They forced everybody into a draft. That was called a sin by David, but they do it today. They're not following Moses. Oh, they got locks and they got prayers and they wobble in front of the wailing wall. But they're not following Moses. They're following other ideologies. In Galatians 5:15, it says, "But if ye bite and devour one another, take heed that ye be not consumed one of another." How do you bite one another? You force your neighbor to pay for your public education. You force your neighbor to pay for your health care. So I asked the question, what do you do? Well, stop coveting. It's through your coveting practices that you have been made merchandise. Peter said that that's what would take place. Through covetousness, you'd be made merchandise. You're now just a human resource. You have to pay in. Stop coveting. That means start taking care of one another through love and charity. Do the, you know, you have two coats, share. Do it in an organized fashion. But do it by the perfect law of liberty. Develop those bonds. Now, this is going to take a while to learn. You want to be exempt this year? No, we've got some other things you can do this year. But you got to realize this is not going to stay static. It's going to get worse. Who's exempt now? The president's exempt. Vice president's exempt. They already have a system in place. Incarcerated criminals, they're exempt. Why? Because they already have a system in place. You, the taxpayers, you have to pay for his health care. They don't need insurance. They're in jail. They get health care. It's humanitarian. You'd be better off in jail. If you only make $10,000 a year, you don't have to pay. You're exempt as an individual. I mean, if husband and wife, you only make $20,000 a year, you're exempt. Undocumented immigrants. Because supposedly they are not eligible for Obamacare, although they often get medical care for free because we're such humanitarians. And we should be. Problem is, it's not really for free. You know, they're taking from neighbors through men who exercise authority, And those men are giving away. So it's not charity. When the government takes care of a foreign immigrant or anybody like, it's not charity. Because they're only giving what they took away from somebody else. Hardship cases, homeless, people who are losing their houses, if they declare bankruptcy within the last 6 months, they don't have to pay in to Obamacare. So all those people are exempt. It says members of recognized health sharing ministries, you know, like HCSM or SM, you know, the Good Samaritan Ministries or Samaritan Ministries, they're exempt. Now, that's not far from the kingdom, but it isn't exactly what you really want either. It's just a private health share. It's, you know, if you're looking for an alternative, you could start there if you want, just so you don't have to pay the fine. It's not a bad deal. But it's not really where you want to go. You know, it's kind of like, you know, if you're drowning, you grab some wreckage so that your head doesn't go under and you die. But when the lifeboat comes on, let go of the wreckage, get in the lifeboat. And the lifeboat is what Christ taught, what he preached, and what he appointed. I appoint unto you a kingdom. And this is what the church is. It's supposed to be facilitating that kingdom where you are free souls under God. We're not going to dictate to you rules. We're just saying this is how it is. If you're not going to take care of one another, expect to be swallowed up by the system. And they're going to become less benevolent. Well, they also go on and says members of some religions are exempt. And, of course, they name Amish and Mennonites, the old Mennonites. But that's not the only ones. There's actually a lot. Tons of them. But they're small groups, and they keep their mouth shut, so you don't know who they are. But I'm on the voice of one crying in the wilderness. I'm trying to show you how to get ready, because it's going to get worse. It's very clear there's an agenda. And if you study history, you'll know the future. And the fact is it took a couple hundred years for Rome to fall. It actually didn't really take all that much time, but you saw the decay. And well, we've already had 100 years of decay from what we used to be. We're gonna be on the fast track here. Now, I don't want to scare you because I don't want a bunch of fraidy cats joining the network. I want you to join for the reason the prodigal son came back to see his father. And that's to serve. Confessing his iniquities, he came back to serve. You do that, the Father will run out and meet you halfway. The Lagrangian effect will take place. You will suddenly be drawn towards righteousness. There's a little bit of unlearning process in this, a little bit of confession and soul searching in this. So yeah, the Amish were exempt, but they were already exempt from Social Security and Medicare. And, you know, like I said, there were, they say small number, but it's actually quite a few religious groups that are also exempt. You won't necessarily see all their names on there because there's other statuses that are involved in this, and we just don't have time to get all into that. But the reality is that the reason you're not exempt is because you're not a Christian. Because you're not following the ways of Christ. You have to start following the ways of Christ. And you really don't have a lot of time to waste. And the way you do it, it's not about following me. It's about gathering together with others that we've been looking for years now. And we filtered through and we're getting kind of a good, strong core group. We have a long ways to go, but that's one of the things about approaching that Lagrangian point, is that as you go, as you approach it, the pull of the Earth's gravity becomes less and less. And you can actually speed towards it at a greater and greater rate. And that's what you, as prodigal sons, that's what you want to do, is you want to head back to your Father's house. And there's many different aspects to this. Healthcare is just one of them. Home education. Already we have fairly large network of people throughout the country that are home educating their children. Home health has already been a part. I mean, we've made tremendous inroads, actually miraculous heals. People are learning more and more about how to sustain their own health so that their health care isn't going to cost quite as much. As a matter of fact, it's going to cost not nearly as much. We just paid somebody's health bill and got a 60% discount because the church was able to pay their a bill that they had because of a terrible accident. And got a 60% discount and already had negotiated many things down. But we don't just do it for them. We teach them how to do it. We've put up on our Preparing You site, we got lots of training information to teach you how to negotiate your bills down, because the insurance companies don't pay what you see on the bill. They've got an agreement to pay less. If more and more people were to gather together in these congregations, you not only could provide a better health care, you could not only do it for far less, you could also prevent a lot of waste of money. You would only be providing it for other people who care about you as much as you care about them. You'd be creating the bonds of a free society, which are faith, hope, and charity, and honor, and trust that is necessary to make for a strong society. You'd be making connections all over the United States and Canada and Australia with people that are coming up with all kinds of great ideas. And also give you a place to go in case where you're at is not as good a place. But I'm not telling you where they're at. And they don't want you to know until they know you. And that's why we create the network. And you have to become involved in the network. You have to become involved in other people's lives. You won't get a list of all the different places where you can go, like some sort of shopping. You have to actually create relationships where you touch each other's lives and help each other. The Band of Brothers, the movie The Band of Brothers, that's why they were a band, not because they went to the same training camp. It's because they sacrificed together. Sacrifice in the Hebrew is the word, comes from the same word that means to draw near. That's what binds you together, is righteousness, honor, charity, love for one another. Hard times make that learning process swifter. It also filters out the foolish who just want to gather for what they can get. They don't want to gather for what they can give. This is how you get really not only exempt from authoritarian healthcare systems, but you put on the full armor of God. And to tell you the truth, we've already seen it. You know, and I'm not going to give you the details because I want you to do this by faith, but I'm just telling you, we've already seen miraculous healings. I mean, it seems like, and again, I just talked in a previous show that there are really no miracles. You know, we think of miracles as something that happens outside of the laws of nature. No, we just have a bigger view of nature. We realize that the kingdom of heaven is at hand. And if you enter into those things, it is natural to have miraculous healings. It is natural to take someone who is not in their right mind and they come into their right mind. Someone who is not physically whole and they become whole. That is natural. If you approach the ways of God, but that requires repentance and confession. Confessing that I've been doing this wrong. And then turn around. Now, like I said, there are some other things that a person can do to lower their health care problem. But we're just not going to have enough time in this show to go into it. We might do it in some of the other shows that we do during the week. I go on to say, Amish say that... say they want to pay our own way, and rightly so. And so I go on to say, can the elders of His Holy Church and their families be exempt? This is the question that people are asking. Elders are the heads of every family in every congregation. Every head of every family is an elder. If they would gather in real congregations of record, or recorded elders, what we call core groups, if they would seek out men of charity and service to be their ministers, if they would diligently sacrifice with tithes of love and charity and wisdom, if they would follow Christ and keep the words of the gospel, the real words of the gospel, not the words of all these churches who say they're following the gospels, but the ones who are actually bearing fruit, if they would seek the kingdom of God and his righteousness, if they would conform to the ways of Christ in the early church, if they would just repent, immerse themselves in the service of Christ, because that's what coming in the Christ name is. Christ came to serve, not be served. If you're going to church because it makes you feel good, you're going for the wrong reason. You go to church because it gives you the opportunity of doing what Christ did, which was to serve others. And confess your sins, you would be exempt already. Your church would be your daily ministration. Your church would be your social assurance. Not only in clothing, but in meats. Not only in salvation of your soul, but the salvation even of your bodies. And you could gather together and attend to the weightier matters of law, judgment, mercy, and faith. Caring for the needs of your neighbor, the widows and the orphans, and the needy of your society, in pure religion. In all matters, including health care, education, welfare, in the Corban of Christ. And until then, may peace be upon your house, and may God be with you. God bless.